All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of The Midnight Ride. And once again, this is Hank Alexand, episode 47 of The Midnight Ride. It's been a good season for us here on our own little independent revolution radio station, if you will. Today, this morning, actually, odd time, it's about 7:45 on Sunday morning here, but I'm very privileged to get a colleague from England, somewhere in Ipswich, I believe, Mr. John Parker. Many of you would know John from Twitter, at Guitar Spoons is his handle there. He also writes for MajorLeagueSoccerUK.com. That's one word. And John, how are you doing today?
I am very well, thank you. Thank you for having me on the show.
I'm very glad to have you on the show. I'm glad we could get this scheduled and worked out. It's a little foggy here for me this morning, particularly in my brain. But you know, I'm willing to get up a little early on a Sunday morning to talk some football.
Superb! I appreciate the effort.
But thanks, man, and thanks for coming on. So, John, talk about a little bit first. Just give us a rundown on what you know, how you got involved following the revolution, and what MajorLeagueSoccerUK.com is doing.
Well, basically, how I got involved with the revolution was my great uncle lives out there in Boston. He actually lives in Ipswich, Boston, which I just thought was the most amazing thing ever growing up. I caught a Red Sox game about 8 years ago now, I reckon, 8-9 years ago. And I just fell in love with Boston. I thought the fans were great. I thought everything was great. And since then, I've started following the Patriots, the Celtics, the Bruins. And so it was just kind of natural for me when my friend Glenn Williams started up the website, MajorLeagueSoccerUK.com. And he asked me, I was doing a degree in script writing at the time, and I was really interested in sports journalism. So he asked me to take part in it, and it just seemed like a natural thing for me to just say, hey, you know, what's the team closest to Boston? Who can I support there? And then stumbled across the revolution. So that's kind of where it started. And Glenn just asked me to write an article a week, starting from, because I've been a huge football fan of my home club, Ipswich Town, since I was really little. So for me, it was just kind of adjusting that into sort of a soccer view. So I started writing an article a week about my views, and starting off from, you know, just assessing what the kit looked like and simple things like that. But now it's kind of grown into this obsession where I can't stop staying up till 5 a.m. just to watch games every weekend.
That's funny stuff, man. And so how long have you been following the Revs, just this season, or has it been a couple of years now?
It's just full-time, I'd say full-time, just from the beginning of this season. But I have known about them and sort of casually, I'd say, followed them for about 2 years.
Right. Well, you know, just between when you were started following the Red Sox, I mean, that's about the same time that I really started dedicating myself to the revolution. You know, they've only been around for 15 years, and so the last 2 years haven't been so great, as you probably know. And, you know, but we had, you know, for the second year in a row now, the Revolution looked like they're not going to make the playoffs. And this is a team that currently holds a record in the New England area for the, you know, Boston team that made the most consecutive playoff appearances with 8, starting in 2002 all the way up through 2009. Yes. So, not too bad for the Revolution, considering that they're probably the least followed team in the area, next to maybe one small step ahead of the Boston lacrosse team, whose name is the Cannons. So that's your next team to follow.
I love that. Get me involved.
But anyway, let's jump right into last Friday night's game against Portland Timbers. It was a late game for us here, so I can only imagine that what it was like for you guys.
Oh, it's mad. Yeah, no, I was eating my breakfast by the end of the game. That was insane.
That's crazy. And so, yeah, I mean, talk about insane. The whole game was kind of insane. I mean, Portland came out flying, and we were able to quickly pull up a two-goal lead going into the half, and you have to wonder what the heck was going on with the Revolution there. They just seemed to be kind of on the back foot from the get-go and offensively struggling. A couple of good chances, but nothing really, you know, huge, and just kind of under pressure from the beginning. And really, John Spencer's whole game plan, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah, no, definitely, definitely. I mean, the one thing I really took away from that was just how slow the Revolution play and how quick the Timbers play. And, I mean, their game plan was just executed superbly. When they came out, they just stopped us having any kind of possession. And then, you know, as much as we try to do the same to them, they're just so quick that, you know, you give them 2 seconds in space on the ball, and we gave them about, you know, 10 minutes in space on the ball. And, you know, they can pass it off, and they just exploited our weaknesses to perfection. And I just think that was a real testament to how good their coach is there.
Yeah, and obviously they came up geared up. I mean, they, talking prior to that game with another kind of an expat Brit who's over here, Chris Ballard, he and I were talking last week on the podcast about what Portland has done this season, and considering that they're an expansion team and coming into the league for the first time, you know, obviously they had a history as the Portland Timbers, but moving that club into the MLS, you know, franchise, the expansion teams, what they've been able to do their first season in the league has been pretty good. And you look at the Sounders, they were able to do it. And Chicago, I think, was the only other team that I think that had any kind of success its first season in the league. And that was back in the 90s. And, but most of these expansion teams struggle, you know, look at Philadelphia, they struggled. And, you know, when you're building it up from nothing, these expansion teams really kind of struggle. So, but you look at Portland and what they bring. I mean, they bring not just the club, but they brought in thousands and thousands of fans as well. And they are just pumped up for this game. And that just has got to get that team on fire. And I think that really helped that home field advantage, if you will, for the Timbers, really helped them keep that momentum up, you know, all the way through, you know, the game. And I don't think the Revolution ever really felt like they were in it.
Oh, yeah, no, not at all, not at all. I mean, the one thing that I did really notice, like you say, when I tuned in there was just how insane the crowd were. You know, they were going nuts from, you know, minute one to, you know, well beyond the game. You know, they were probably partying for hours after that game, the way they were going.
Absolutely.
It really reminded me, honestly, it reminded me of a miniature version of the Nou Camp. You know, it was really hostile. And then, you know, some dude comes up with a chainsaw and you start going, what's going on here? What's happening here? You know, so it was, no, for me, I mean, it was one of the most intimidating stadiums I think that we've played in all year.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and I mean, we've been up to New York, and I know what people up there are like. you know, you go to Portland, you know, you expect, you know, this, like you say, an expansion team. You expect them to, you know, be doing mediocre in their first season, getting used to the league, et cetera, et cetera. You know, as we've seen other teams flop in other leagues across America, you know, it's kind of, you have to struggle through those first few years. But no, I mean, they have far exceeded, I think, all expectations. And they've really surprised us all, I think.
Right. And you know, you and I were talking a bit about the Revolution, you know, a little bit before the show, and some of the struggles they've had. And I think some of those struggles were very evident in this particular game. I mean, you know, the Timbers home field advantage, whatever, that's one thing. But also the Revolution failing to execute, particularly, I think, on the back four. And this is something we'll probably come back to throughout the show, so don't worry about it and talking about it now. But, you know, well, I mean, we should definitely talk about it in context of this game, because I think both of the early goals were, you know, you could attribute directly to actually all three goals. You contribute directly to the ineffectiveness of the Revolution back line.
Oh, undoubtedly. Absolutely, undoubtedly. Yeah, no, I was fuming. sat here in my bedroom. I was absolutely fuming watching the game. No, because I'm such a defensively minded person. Every sport that I've ever played has just been very defensively approached. You know, so my whole outlook on it is, you know, that you can win a game with one goal, but you can't win a game if you're letting in 200, 300 goals a game. You know, you just can't, you can't let it happen. And the Revolution in this game, unfortunately, the defense was just, I can't even find a word in the dictionary to describe how terrible it was. So if anyone has a word for terrible, then, you know, let us know. And I can start using that from now on, because I can't even use the word abysmal anymore, because it was worse than abysmal.
It was, and it's something that you know, we keep coming back to, and we'll talk about it more in the second half of the show. But you know, the goal, especially the goal in my mind, the goal that set up Kenny Cooper, so to speak, which you know, it's a bouncing ball that flies. I think it's heading out. It's heading out, and nobody bothers to track it down except for, I think it was Mike Chabala who gets over there and keeps that ball up. Or maybe it was Lavelle Palmer. It was Lavelle Palmer who went over there, got the ball, flipped it over to Chabala, who whipped it right in front of the Revolution goalkeeper, Matt Rhys. And, you know, there's Kenny Cooper making his run in, and, you know, He looked kind of covered, not too particularly well covered, but how can you give these guys on the wings that much space to even get in a position to get the cross off? And that's what really frustrated me watching this game, is that it happened on a couple of occasions, is that, you know, it's not just shutting down the guys in the box, it's shutting down the chances before they start. And it's something that the Revolution have just seemed to struggle with time in and time out. And go ahead.
It almost hurts me to hear you describe that. Again, you know, it made me cringe a little bit just hearing the description of that goal. Because I mean, I've written down here, this is one of my notes, was just how many crosses they had all game. Just, it was just cross after cross after cross, and we just did nothing. And I was sitting there screaming, you know, after the first goal went in, I was, you know, screaming, you know, just stop it, go to them, you know, mark them, you know, because as many bodies as we were putting into the box, people were just standing about, no one was marking, and like you say, the balls were just flying in there, and one had to go in eventually. You know, if you fire 1,000 arrows at a guy, one of them's eventually going to hit him, isn't it? And yeah, that's the way I looked at it. You know, eventually we were gonna concede. There was never a point at which I wasn't certain of that, because I mean, the defense just doesn't seem to know where they're going or what they're doing, or I think it's more communication that's needed in there, really. And I think that was clear. No one was sort of telling each other what they were doing or who they were marking. And I think that was such a key part of the game. I think we almost gifted it there, because some of those goals were just horrific. You know, I think we could have got put on trial for some of those goals we let in there. It was just atrocious. I mean, I'd be ashamed if I was a defender there at the Revolution, I think, having watched those back and going, you know, how on earth did we let them in?
Right, right. And I think, you know, one thing that, and maybe this was some of the strategy going into the game, and we won't know this ever for sure, but Gerald Winfield being a kind of a short or a narrow pitch, you know, I was looking for Kevin Alston on that first goal. I couldn't see him anywhere. He was up the field. And, you know, then on the second goal, so Kevin Alston's playing in the middle of the field, and Zirka is covering the guy on the left. So, you know, how is this defense organized in such a bizarre way? And maybe it was because of the narrowness that they were kind of almost playing three in the back and moving Alston up a little bit. And I don't know if that was the intention going into the game or not, but that certainly was what was happening. And Alston definitely getting forward into the attack, and, you know, and actually for the first time I've ever seen, he's playing with somebody who actually passes him the ball in the corner, with Matsef Zirka. I mean, Kevin used to make those overlapping runs with Saini Nyasi all the time, and Nyasi would never pass him the ball, ever.
Yeah.
ever. And, you know, that was actually when Kevin came into the league, that was, he was always a very effective person on the overlapping run. Actually, he played left back in college. I don't know if you knew that, but he would, he was very effective coming in from the left side and then cutting into the right, and a very offensive minded fullback. And when, and, you know, it's something that's been kind of, you know, taken away from his game being with the Revolution, and the fact that he's had to play, a strictly kind of a supporting role and not getting into the attack as much. And so I think, you know, he's trying to change that element of his game now. But in terms of the Revolution offense on the field, you know, we saw some great play, I think, from Benny and from Shalri again. And I like what I'm seeing from Moncef Zirka, although I don't think he had as an effective a game this week as he did against Dallas. But the big problems, I think, for the Revolution in terms of the offense, you know, Caraglio had a great shot on the first half, but wasn't able to convert. But man, he just, you know, had a wonderful strike, and Perkins was up to the task. But the big thing there was is that they couldn't get the ball off. They couldn't get the shot off. It was coming into that very crowded, you know, 6-yard area in the 18, and not able to effectively muster a good shot, and ended up constantly losing the ball in their own in the attacking third.
Yeah, no, I mean, the thing that I really took away from that was just how determined the Timbers were to defend that box. I mean, every time you went anywhere near that 18-yard box, there were people flying at you, which I would just thought was fantastic. I mean, that's the kind of die-hard defending that I really want to see from the Revs. But, you know, every time we got anywhere near there, there was men coming out, attacking, being aggressive. The only shots, like you say, that we managed to get off were quick-fire shots at the goal, you know, and you're never going to score with them kind of things. I mean, I was very, very pleased with the shot that Caraglio got off. I thought Benny was superb. Obviously, one of my favourite guys at the Revolution is Lecic. I really feel like he winds up defenders. He gets stuck in there. And there was a few moments where he really sort of pushed over defenders and really got stuck in, and
before he went off injured, which is a caution that we'll have to talk about as well. But I didn't mean to cut you off. But yeah, he's definitely, Lekic has, you know, him rolling his ankle, whatever. I don't know what the prognosis is, but he's off now. We'll see what happens for him going in. Chalosky had to come in and take his place, and just completely different type of player, really still very raw, so to speak, and somebody who's kind of suffering in his confidence, I think, because he hasn't played as much.
Yeah, I think that really damaged him earlier in the year. I think he was starting to really pick up his play, and then obviously he just got dropped, and we never really saw him again. So I think, yeah, like you say, I think that's something that he's got to get over now, but it may be his chance to shine. You know, this injury could be a golden moment for him to come and take over. But I think that is, like you say, Ryko's injury there is something that we've really got to watch as Revolution fans, I think. And that could really affect the way that we approach games for the rest of the season now.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, you know what? We're going to take a break here. We'll come back. We'll talk about the Revolution going forward in their next game coming up against Chicago and then the rest of the season. And we'll get your input as to what the Revs will be focusing on for the next few weeks. So everybody stick around. We'll be right back after this. Girl, you thought you found the answer on that magic carpet ride last night. But when you wake up in the morning, the world still gets you uptight.
This is Danny Bierstein, founder of the Free Beer Movement. Help us build American soccer one beer at a time by visiting www.thefreebeermovement.com. It's American soccer culture with a nice buzz.
This is Darius Barnes, and you're listening to The Midnight Ride.
Water. já está na hora.
All right, we're back with more on the Midnight Ride. This is Hank, joined by John Parker, MajorLeagueSoccerUK.com, the Revolution correspondent for that website. John, looking at the Revolution's remaining schedule here, obviously the first game coming up against Chicago Fire, and, you know, this Revolution fans hate Chicago. All right, they hate basically every other team in the East, and including Houston Dynamo, even though this is the first year they're in the West. But for me, personally, there's no other team that I despise more than Chicago Fire. And I don't know why, particularly. I just can't get my, you know, there's something about Chicago that I really despise. And we're going to be playing them in Toyota Park next Sunday, 4 o'clock Eastern Time. So that'll be a lovely evening broadcast for you, late Sunday night. You'll be able to catch that. But the thing for me is, you know, the Revolution coming into this game now with really nothing to play for in terms of the playoffs. I think it's basically safe to say that the Revolution's playoff chances went out the window a couple of weeks ago, and, you know, although they're not mathematically eliminated yet, it's everything needs to go their way, and I don't know how they would be able to actually pull together the kind of results needed to make the playoffs at this stage, unless you dock the other team's points, which isn't going to happen in this league. So, that being said, Chicago, sitting at you know, having played just 28 games, are sitting with a record almost as bad as the Revolution. They've got 5-15 draws, 8 losses, just the 5 wins, 30 points. But 3 wins in their last 5. And you got to think that they're a team that is still thinking about the playoffs.
Oh, they're still warming up, I think. They're in full let's get ourselves into the playoff mode, whereas I think Revolution are in full let's just get to the end of the season mode. That's how I would describe it. But I definitely think Chicago can be felled, I think. I don't think that they're going to be as big a challenge as the Timbers were for us. I think they suit our style of play a lot more. I think that we've got a lot more at stake when we play them as well. I think our fans will be up for it a lot more. So I think that will really make the team put in a lot more effort than they did in the last game. So I can only think that this could be a better result than the Timbers. But then I always look positively at these games. I can never turn my back on the Revolution. So
absolutely. Yeah, you got to stay positive. But, you know, it's funny you mentioned, because the game being in Chicago actually will probably mean there will be some more Revolution fans there. You would hope, anyway, that, you know, maybe some of the fans from the area here travel out to Chicago. I know a lot of these guys from the fort will actually make the trip. Being a Sunday afternoon might be a little dicey, especially if you have to go to work on Monday morning. But it's very likely that the Revolution will have some good fans there. Plus, there are a lot of Boston people that have relocated out to the Chicago area. Hopefully, it'll be a good thing. But, you know, the thing going in for Chicago, I was trying to find some stats as to who from the Fire is we need to watch out for. I know Corey Gibbs, a former Revolution player. We actually had him for last season and let him go, and I think he got picked up in the kind of reallocation process, or whatever you want to call it, by Chicago. And he's had a pretty good season out there. And he actually picked up a red card the last game. So he will be out for the game against the Revolution, which might actually be good for New England.
In my mind, that is good news. I always have this fear of ex-players whenever you go and play them, I always feel like they've got something to prove. They always want to show up the team when they're playing them again, and obviously I think he would have had a real point to prove with us going in there. So that is probably a good turn of luck for us with him being out for that game.
Yeah, and I think with the Revolution maybe coming off this and get, like you said, getting up for the Chicago game, their defense not being all that great, you know, they've let in a few goals as well this season. Not as many as the Revolution have, but, you know, 37 is more goals allowed than they've scored, shall we say. And, this is a very winnable game for the Revolution, is my point. And I think, so let's figure out, you know, if without Lekic coming into this game, how do you think the Revolution need to, what should the Revolution be thinking going into this game with, you know, just five games left in the schedule?
I think, do you know what? I think the Revolution have got nothing to lose at this point. I think, you know, they're only going to surprise people if they make it to the playoffs. So for me, I think they should just throw everything at this game. And I think the great thing for us is that our attack is so strong now that maybe if we do throw guys forward, then, you know, even if we do concede two goals in a game, if we can go and score three, then, you know, then we're getting somewhere. And I think a team like Chicago, we've really got something going there. Like you say, their defense is weak. It's certainly not as strong as other teams in the league. And I think that, like I say, our attack is such a strong point of our team that I think that we could really get a few goals in there. I think it would just be a case of we've just got to defend against them. Because I think, like you say, like they're really warming up. They're starting to get warm now. Their fans are probably thinking we can just scrape into the playoffs here. So I think from their point of view, they're going to be doing exactly the same thing. So from our point of view, defend, but throw everything forward at the same time. I'm quite excited because, I mean, one guy that I've always talked about this season is Mansali. I mean, I think that he is probably one of the better players at the Revolution, in my honest opinion. And I really want to see him shine more. I really want to see him getting more opportunities. And I think this could be a game in which, you know, if we haven't got Lekic, I think we could really throw Mansali forward and see what we can give him, really. I think he's young, he's talented, he's quick. You know, why not give the boy a chance? And, you know, now with our new signings, I really like Milton. I really love him as a player. I think he's superb. You know, and both of them, I think they're both the same age, are they? Are they both 22?
Yep.
So I'd really love to see both of them forward together. I think that's such a great attacking team. I think it's literally just a case of if we can stop the rot at the back four, then I think we'll be all right against Chicago. That would be my plan anyway. Stick the young guys forward, play an attacking game and see what happens.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's probably a better lineup than putting in Zach Schalosky at this stage. You know, get Caraglio and Mansali up there. Mansali loves to run off of other people, and if Milton can hold the ball up a bit, you know, Mansali should be able to capitalize using his speed, and I think that would definitely be there to the advantage. And also, you know, you got to look at, you know, Moncef Zirka, whose game, in my opinion, very closely resembles, and I actually kind of joked about this when he came in, because I said, who the heck is Moncef Zirka? And I was reading about him, various things about what kind of player he was, and he said, you know, on paper, he sounds like a Moroccan Marco Papa. And Papa playing, you know, that kind of winger role for the Fire. And you know, and it seems to me that that's actually kind of the case. And so, actually, this could be a pretty good matchup between Zirka and Papa. I'm actually looking forward to seeing if they match up at all on the field. It could be, you know, Zirka could end up being the real find of the season for the Revolution, if you think about it, because when they lost Perovic to the knee injury, early on, they didn't really have anybody to come right in and fill that role. And that's part of the reason why the Revolution struggled for so long. But, you know, with the addition of Zirka now, we've actually got a pretty good midfield with Shaori and Benny supporting the front line the way they have. And then Chris Tierney also is just really kind of benefiting from that strength. You know, the knock on Tierney has always been his speed, and something that he's worked on his own. But you can't really coach speed. So it's something that he's got to just adapt, bring out his best game, play a solid game. And, you know, he's going to end up probably being the one that matches up against Papa most of the game. If Papa's playing on the right hand side. So it'll be fun to see how it all shakes out. But, you know, you were talking a little bit, and I want to get back to this. You're talking a little bit about defend. And, you know, let's really get into it now. You know, what is the problem here with the New England defense?
What isn't the problem with the defense? That's probably the question that I would put there. I'm just thinking to myself here, what defensive players we've got at the Revolution, and I think what we've got about five or six players, I think, in the entire team who play defense.
Right.
And I don't think we've seen a couple of them for most of the season. So I think it's just the same guys. There's no pressure there on them. There's no competitive nature, I don't think, in the defense on the team. You know, there's no one fighting for those places. I think it's literally, let's stick Kevin Alston in, and I think he's been really off and on this season. Darius Barnes is another one. I haven't been impressed with him. And I think Ryan Cochran, I like him, but I don't think he's the greatest for this league. It's just players like that. It's players that don't impress you, but they are what they are. They're part of the team, and you stick them at the back and you hope for the best. But I think with the way this league's going, it's getting a lot more competitive, and I really, really think we need to focus on the defense. And I mean, we talked before, and you said that Nichols come under some criticism for his defensive coaching before, and obviously gone out all out on attacking this year. And I really think that it's shown that he does need to work on that defense, because that is such a key part of the game. And like I was saying before, you know, you're not going to get anywhere if you're conceding more goals than you're scoring. So for me, I think we really, really need to look at this defense. And I honestly looking at this team, I can't pick a back four that I'd be happy with. I can pick a midfield I'd be happy with. I'd be very happy with Benny and Shaori there in the midfield, you know, and I'd be very happy, like we've already discussed, with the up front. But the back four is just such a problem, I think. And I don't know what your opinion is of that, who you would pick as your starting back four.
Well, I mean, given the personnel that we have, I would pick Alston, because there's no other alternative at right back. But I would pick Alston. I would pick Coria and Barnes as center backs. And Barnes actually played his entire first season. He played every minute of every game two seasons ago. At center back, every minute, every game. And he was great. And, you know, the Revolution sneaked into the playoffs and they lost. But that worked pretty well. And then at left back, I don't have a person there, because we don't have a natural left back. And this is my big beef. New England last season had a great young man by the name of Sestanovic, who's now playing with Kansas City, and he's playing very well for Kansas City, and he's worked his way into that starting lineup. Kansas City was able to pick up Sestanovic for nothing, because the Revolution, as Steve Nichol himself said last season, that Sestanovic, or was this two seasons ago, Sestanovic, Zach Schalosky, and Zach Boggs were the three of the best draft picks in the league. And, you know, these guys were going to be the cornerstones that we're going to build on going forward. And, you know, Sestanovic came out had a great first few games with the Revolution, because he was filling in basically while Corey Gibbs was getting healthy and all this other stuff. But then he was relegated to the bench, and nobody could ever figure out why. Revolution then signed him to an extension, and then, unfortunately, they went out and they signed Didier Domi. And I guess they felt that they had enough cover at left back positions that they didn't need Seth Sinovic anymore. And well, look how that worked out. But, you know, obviously Didier Domi, failed experiment. Usman Dabo, failed experiment. And, you know, they went out to try to get these kind of quality veteran leadership that maybe would have been effective in this league a couple of years ago, but not anymore. I think the league has changed. The league has grown. It's going to be players like Mansab Zerka, who maybe are a bit of journeymen in Europe, that will be able to find a real kind of home here in MLS. You know, and I think that that's the real problem with the Revolution defense, in my opinion, is that they don't have that leadership. I mean, you talk about Ryan Cochran; he's 28 years old, but he's never really been the shutdown center back that in any position really. He had a couple of good seasons with the Earthquakes a few years ago, and it got injured and never really got back into it. You know, he was let go by Houston, and the Revolution were able to pick him up through that same allocation process where Chicago was able to get Corey Gibbs. But, you know, this is a team that defensively was always very, very strong. And you look at going back to a few years ago when they played a 3-5-2 with Jay Heaps, Michael Parkhurst, you know, sometimes Chris Albright, sometimes Kevin Alston, and it was very, very effective. And that defense was really supported by a very strong midfield line. And I think the five-man midfield for the Revolution those days was the real, you know, the real engine behind the whole team, both defensively and offensively. So I'm going off on a tangent. I'm talking history, and I really shouldn't be. We should talk a little bit more about what the Revolution kind of need to focus on, you know, with this remaining schedule here. So let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about what the Revolution need to do for the rest of the season. All right. And
let's do it.
All right. So everybody stick around. We'll be right back right after this. All right, we're back with the final segment here on the Midnight Ride, joined once again by John Parker, MajorLeagueSoccerUK.com, Guitar Spoons on Twitter. Very, very good follow, shall we say. A good fellow to follow, to put it in your vernacular.
I like that. Thank you.
So, my worst English accent ever. The Revolution and... We were starting to talk about this before the break, so let's just get right into it now. The Revolution, being what they are, with the personnel they have, is it time now just to let it all hang out there, throw the kids on, and let them and see what we've got going for next season? Or do we just try and play spoiler for the rest of the season and try and build a core team around the players, around the starters that we have?
Well, I think, in my opinion, honestly, what I've been saying to people the last couple of games is that I feel like we need to show to the players that we've got there now why we need them. And I think, you know, like we're talking about the strengths that we've got here. We've got players like Benny who have come in this year, and you know they're probably feeling quite disillusioned.
Oh yeah.
They've come into this team that they thought, you know, oh, we're going to pick this up, we're going to do really well, we're going to go to the playoffs. They haven't, and I really think that they're going to be looking and saying, you know, well, maybe I should go to another team for next year. You know, maybe I should say, you know, I want out of this. So I think we really need to show to them some commitment and say, you know, look, we're going to change this, we're going to turn this around. And I think the next couple of games are going to be crucial in terms of that, in terms of players planning for next season and what they want to do and where they want to go. And there's obviously such a quick turnaround in the league with players. You know, as you were describing the last segment, you know, there's players in the last few years that have just flown about all over the place. And I think we really need to decide who we want and start playing that core team. And I mean, one interesting statistic that I looked at in the game was that this is only the second time, I think, all season that Nickel hasn't changed the lineup of the team or something. Right. I think that was the statistic. And
it's
I'm just
true.
Like that. That just shows, you know, we've had no consistency. And I didn't realize quite how much it changed all season. But obviously that kind of made me go, wow. And I think that just shows that, you know, we really need to look at these players and say who needs to be starting, who needs to go, and, you know, really, really give them and tell them straight. Because I don't think the players know half the time what's going on by the looks of them. You know, I really think that we need to show a statement, really show them our intent, what we do with them. So for me, the next couple of games, to answer the question, to go back to it instead of rambling, I would really focus on starting a core team and using that core team and trying to integrate the youngsters that you want to keep in there as well as that. People like Mansali, you know, are going to say, well, you know, I haven't had the greatest amount of starts this year, and he's a really useful player. So I think, you know, if we want to look at keeping him, we really need to start showing him some love. So yeah, that's what I'd do. That would be my plan, would be consolidate the team, really.
Yeah, and I agree. And so, you know, maybe a makeshift lineup again this weekend because of the injury to Lekic. Maybe you don't want to force the whole issue with the left back position. Maybe, but maybe they bring Chris Tierney back into a left back position and let Zirka play the left hand side. Maybe they bring out somebody like Ryan Kinney, Zach Boggs, or maybe bring back Sani Niasse, bring on some speed against the right side of New England, of Chicago, excuse me. And I'm just looking at the actually Sani Niasse is listed as out on the last injury report. So that's he's not an option. My bad. So Sani not being an option kind of changes a little bit, not so much. Maybe you keep Zirka on the right hand side and maybe you bring Tierney back out, but with that speed that they have with Nyarko and Oduro and Papa, I mean, these guys are fast. I don't know what they're going to do. I'd actually like to see guys get a chance, maybe bring them up in the second half, guys like Ryan Kinney, guys like Andrew Sousa. These guys, you know, we're brought on for a reason here, and we haven't really gotten a chance to see them play unless you've seen the reserve games, which are never televised. But the point being is that the Revolution need to start developing some options as well. I mean, they need to, yes, I agree 100%. Benny is going to want to bail. I mean, I would want to bail if I were him. And his body language to me for the most of the season, up until recently, his body language has suggested that he's been very disillusioned. And over the last few games, I think, you know, the way that they've played, you know, shows that, yes, they're capable of attacking, they're capable of scoring, they're capable of winning, and that these defensive lapses have been killing them. Especially you look at, you know, the game against Houston and New York, where it was so close to the very end. I mean, and then even you have to bring in Philadelphia, which was just a complete defensive nightmare. I didn't think it could get that bad, but it was. But and it really comes all back down to the fact that the Revolution don't have that competition in the back. and something I actually brought up with Steve Nichol in the preseason, asking if he was going to look for another right back there to provide cover. And, you know, he joked about, you know, putting on his boots and being able to cover that position if they need to. And it was funny at the time. But it's
I'd actually quite agree with that. I'd be like, yeah, I think he's probably one of our more useful players. so I would completely agree with him there and say, you know, get out there for the last couple of games.
Absolutely. Player manager.
Yeah, exactly. Get him some boots. Get him out there. I mean, we can't do any worse, can we? So I wouldn't have even took that as a joke, to be honest. I'd have been like, get out there.
But, you know, bring it home with the lack of depth there, and just the fact that there's really no other options. Zach Boggs, maybe. And the point is, you know, the Revolution are just going to continue to fail unless they really start to address this issue. And you go back and you look at their super draft, which the Revolution historically have always taken defenders and, you know, have been yelling at them for years and years and years. Like, why do you keep taking these guys? And then you don't keep them and, you know, you don't give them a chance to develop. And Cessinovic, perfect example. But, and then you get like guys like Michael Parkhurst, you know, walk away. And I don't know if you know who Michael Parker still, he's playing in Norway now, but he was the star of this team, you know, defender of the year as a rookie, and just a fantastic, fantastic center back, and a guy that really looked more like a winger or a, you know, a really slight build on this guy. He barely weighed 150 if he did that. Anyway, the point being is, you know, they had these kind of real talent, real finds, and they aren't able to keep them. And that's another thing that's going to kill this team in the end. So if they're able to keep Benny and re-sign Chalry to an extension of something, being the last contract, last year of his contract this season, you got to think that they've got the potential here to really build a strong core, especially, you know, if you go start with Benny and Chalry in the middle, and you're able to keep a guy like Lekic and Caraglio. I mean, that's a good core unit right there you can build off. And if Zirka stays, great. And they're going to have Tierney, great. So there's some continuity that this team can really build on. And I think that's going to be key for the rest of this season is build up that core, build up that sense of unity and strength, and crank out a few wins. Crank out a few wins, start building that confidence, do it one game at a time, and, you know, end on a high note. You know,
I couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more there.
I think if they just tank and they let it go, then, or if they play all the kids, they're going to lose the rest of the team. And talk about going back to the drawing board. That will be a disaster. Anyway, John, we're at the end of time here, so let's wrap it up. John, talk about your website. What do you got in the works on Major League Soccer UK?
What we've got in the works? Wow, we've got a lot going on actually. We've kind of, this year has been a real test for us. We kind of lost the website owner halfway through the year, and anyone who follows me on Twitter will know that kind of it nearly died a death, unfortunately. And we've had to build like a really nice little team of writers again, and we've got a new owner who is currently actually over in America in Columbus, making friends. Dan Bidmead is over there trying to make connections and things. So, I mean, it's really great because we've really been able to make a lot better communication and things. And this is testament to it. I mean, thank you so much for having me on the show. I really appreciate that. It's stuff like that that we're really trying to work on at the moment. I've emailed the MLS to see if we can kind of get a little scheme going there. Maybe get some merchandise that we can sell to people in the UK here, because obviously we have to get everything shipped over at the moment,
right,
from the States. So I think for us, that's the kind of thing that we want to be aiming for. We really want to develop, and we really want to get more involved. And I'd like to get more involved in the community and things like that in throughout New England and Boston. And I'd really love to be involved with everything that goes on stateside, really, because I don't really have a lot of input with fans and things at the moment. But I mean, the response to my Twitter this year has been fantastic.
Yeah.
So I think next year, like the Revolution, I think next year we're just going to have to, you know, really go for it, really try and build on that and go from strength to strength, hopefully. But we are the leading website in the UK for MLS at the moment.
Fantastic.
So that is exciting news.
So have you noticed a big kind of, you know, MLS, particularly since, you know, David Beckham came over here, seems to be gaining traction everywhere. What have you noticed about MLS? And give us just a couple minutes or whatever, a few seconds, if you will, on what MLS, how MLS has grown in terms of the perception, or has it, you know, is it still kind of a negative perception, or is it more of a positive perception? What's going on with MLS in the eyes of the, you know, the UK in particular?
Well, I'll be honest, the thing, I get asked this question quite a lot, and the problem is that people in the UK are so adamant that the Barclays Premier League is the big football league in the world now. We won't even admit that, that, you know, the likes of Barcelona and Real Madrid are better than us now. A lot of English fans call the MLS a Sunday league, which is just sort of referring to our pub teams that we have,
right,
sort of amateur league and things here in the UK. That's what they call it, to be completely honest with you. That's what I thought of it anyway until a couple of years ago. And I watched the first MLS game I watched was the cup final between Real Salt Lake and LA Galaxy. And I kind of, the thing that really struck me about the game was just how different it was. And how there was a lot of long balls and things like that. It was so different to the Premier League. But really coming into it this year, I've really noticed that, you know what, it's really picking up. It's a really good league. I've said to people before, I think that it would happily sandwich in our league. I'd say sort of, you know, a championship level, if not pushing towards the Premier League. You know, I think it's getting bigger. It's getting a lot more notoriety now. There's a lot of players over there, you know, who've had great careers and have moved to America, and I think that's testament to how good the league is. The fans are great, so I think people in the UK are really starting to switch onto it. It's now reported on our Sky Sports News channel. In answer to the question, I really think that the UK is beginning to find some love for the MLS. I mean, it was hard times to begin with, and I was one of them, admittedly, who kind of wrote off the MLS. But no, now I think it's really turning, and people are sort of saying to me now, "Oh, what's the MLS all about? You know, who's playing? You know, what team's here? Do New York have a team or whatever? You know, people are coming up to me and asking me things like that." And because I mean, NFL here is a big thing. NFL is huge in the UK at the moment.
Right.
So I think a lot of people who watch that are now sort of tuning into all the other ones. And I mean, that was how I began, obviously, with the Red Sox, and kind of spiraled into everything. And now I think a lot of other people are following in my footsteps and doing the same thing. So I think it'll grow in the next few years, I think, in the UK. That's our hope, is that people will start using our website and we'll be able to do some more specific articles than we are at the moment. I think the interest is there. Obviously, we're such a huge footballing nation, and it's one of the most watched sports in the world. So I can only imagine that the MLS is going to get more and more notoriety, especially as the clubs begin to invest more, and you've got all these soccer-specific stadiums and things now, and the Revolution hopefully are going to get their own one soon.
That's another podcast right there. Yeah, absolutely.
That is a whole other issue, a whole other kettle of fish.
Other episode. We'll have to talk about that at some other point. But, John, thanks so much for coming on once again. Everybody, at Guitar Spoons on Twitter. And check his stuff out at MajorLeagueSoccerUK.com. John, thanks again.
Thank you very much indeed for having me.
So before we sign off for tonight, I did want to read one email that I got from a listener, Mr. Declan Murphy. Declan wrote in, "Hey, Hank, just wanted to say I enjoy your podcast every week. I work overnight during doing graphic design for a magazine, and it's quite a long night, so it's nice to have your podcast to listen to. I listened to your most recent podcast, and before the last segment, you said something about after the break, you would discuss the New England Revolution Stadium. And then after the break, I didn't hear anything about it. I, as well as many others, I'm sure, would love to hear anything about a new stadium. So what were you going to say about that? Or will we hear next week? Thanks again for an informative and entertaining podcast. Have a great weekend. Signed, Declan Murphy. Go Revs. Well, Declan, thanks so much for writing in. And I did actually respond to Declan in an email saying, I goofed. I actually misspoke. I was in such a hurry to get through last week's episode that I misspoke and said stadium when I meant to say the New England Revolution season. And unfortunately, I have no news about a new stadium. There hasn't been anything really new in that regard. People that have listened to this podcast know my sentiments about Patriot Place and how I think for the foreseeable future it will be the Revolution's home, considering that the amount of investment that the Kraft family has put into it. But that's a whole other podcast, and hopefully at some point we can talk to some people from the Revolution specifically about what their future plans are. But Declan, I did want to say that in writing to me here at the podcast and having your email read on the air, you have earned yourself free beer. This is something I will be happy to provide to anybody who's over the age of 21 at the next tailgate. So October 1st, I will be at the stadium and I will be giving away free beer. So if you want free beer, send me an email, revsmidnightride@gmail.com. You can also get in touch with the show through Twitter at TMR Podcast. You can also leave us a voicemail. The number is 339-204-1775. Email me about whatever you want. If I read it on the show, I'll give you a free beer. If you're not 21, I'll give you an IOU for a free beer when you are 21. But, you know, send us your emails, and we look forward to hearing from you. Thanks again to John Parker. And we'll catch you guys next time on the Midnight Ride.